Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
East Berlin tonight. Tens of thousands of people crossing into West Berlin, pouring through the Berlin Wall, which opened today. Not waiting for official visas or even daybreak, they are still coming. We are truly privileged tonight. We are eyewitnesses to history.
Garrick Utley, reporting for NBC News 20 years ago today. So imagine you're 20 years old, born in 1989, and you're walking through Barnes & Noble, or maybe appropriately Borders, or page surfing on Amazon, and you realize half the new books coming out, nonfiction, are about the year I was born. And you wonder, what was so important about the year I was born, besides me? Well, one thing that's amazing about today's 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall is how many versions there still are of how it came to happen. So we will start this hour with three authors of new books about the collapse of communism 20 years ago. Each is excellent in its unique way. At least two of them offer lessons for President Obama about how to lead in this complicated time and learn lessons from that one. With me now, Ramesh Ratnasar, Deputy Managing Editor for Time Magazine, author of Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and a Speech That Ended the Cold War. Michael Meyer, Newsweek Bureau Chief for Germany at the time, author of The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story Behind the Fall of the Berlin Wall, and Victor Sebastien, Hungarian-born author of many books, including now Revolution 1989, The Fall of the Soviet Empire. Welcome, all of you. Hello.
Hello.
Hi there, Brian.
And Victor, you're in London. Ramesh, you're in D.C. Michael Meyer is in our studio. Let me try to start with some short answers from each of you with a little experiment, and then we'll get into each of your books. Let's imagine you are talking to a 20-year-old, someone who was born on November 9th, 1989, and that person asks you, Michael Meyer, everyone's writing books about the year I was born. What was so important about the year I was born?
It was the year that a force that seemed so much greater than you, than each of us, governed our lives, divided our world into East and West, North and South, the quote-unquote free and unfree. And then individuals like you made individual choices and acted collectively to end this great divide in a dramatic moment. And understanding that history is key to understanding your present.
Ramesh Ratnasar, same question. The enduring significance of the year that 20-year-old was born.
Well, I agree with what Michael just said. I guess I would say that for any of us who witnessed what happened that fateful night, it is a reminder that change is possible in the world, and that even things that seem unshakable and immovable, like the Berlin Wall, can in fact be overcome. And I think it's a moment and a time and a story of tremendous hope. And I think that's something that's important for us to occasionally remember, even in these difficult times.
Victor Sebastien, anything to add?
Well, it's just the extraordinary surprise of that moment, that the world just seemed totally fixed between these two camps, and then suddenly, I do agree with the other two that it is an inspiring story of hope, but that this could have happened. It just seemed such an extraordinary historic event. I never thought I could see it in my lifetime.
Let me go.
No one predicted it in the military, the media, diplomacy. The surprise of it was the excitement.
Let me go around real quick on the question. What's the biggest myth surrounding 1989? Ramesh?
Well, I think the biggest myth is probably the one that we hear most often in the United States, which is that the United States won the Cold War. I don't think either side won the Cold War. The Cold War ended because two leaders, in my view, Mikhail Gorbachev and Ronald Reagan, sought to find a way out of it and established a dialogue and a partnership that ultimately brought down this conflict that had divided the world. But I don't think, and I think Ronald Reagan never claimed credit and never claimed that he had won the Cold War. He always credited Gorbachev with being the decisive actor. So I think that's the myth that I try to challenge in my book, and I think Michael does as well in his, and I think it's important for us to try to dispel.
Victor, biggest myth?
Well, I mean, I challenge that in mine as well. It's becoming the new orthodoxy, whereas for the last sort of 15 years or so, the orthodoxy was that Ronald Reagan won the Cold War. Now that seems to have changed. The East Europeans liberated themselves. They were given a bit of assistance by the West, but essentially this is a story of liberation by the East Europeans themselves and by a man called Mikhail Gorbachev.
Michael Meyer, amen, or anything to add?
Well, amen on Ronald Reagan. I think the biggest myth is the people rose up and threw off tyranny.
How much do you think the collapse of capitalism, as we knew it last year, makes 20-year bookends with the collapse of communism, and how much is that a media falsehood? Ramesh?
Well, you know, I think it's a sign that, you know, history moves on and that the notion that 1989 signaled this moment in which one system triumphed forever and that there was an unshakable moment of victory, I think, has certainly been dispelled over the last few years. And I think we've realized that our power is not invincible and that our model of capitalism has flaws as well. And I think you're right that there is a kind of aptness to the fact that we're seeing so many challenges to the free market capitalist model we've become accustomed to, just as we remember the end of the old communist model.
Victor, how does that question look to somebody who came from Hungary within the Soviet Empire?
Well, I actually came from Hungary when I was a baby, so I couldn't remember the crisis of communism at that point, or indeed a crisis of capitalism. We've yet to see, the premise of the question is we've yet to see how deep this crisis of capitalism is. But that night, November the 9th, 1989, that was certainly the night that the ghastly experiment of communism was shown up to be a total failure. So there was a finality there. There were a few loose ends still, you know, Cuba, North Korea, whatever. But basically, that was the night communism died.
Michael, you were Newsweek, Germany, and Eastern Europe bureau chief at the time. What were people rebelling against in tearing down the Soviet Empire? Was it the lack of political freedom, as we would like to believe in the West, or a more mundane lack of material wealth? I ask because people rebelled against communist China that same year at Tiananmen Square, but they are not rebelling against today's capitalist China, which still has no freedom but 9% economic growth.
Very good point. A moment ago, I said that one of the myths we carry with us from 1989 is that the people rose up to throw off tyranny. I disagree. In East Germany, people took to the streets, but that was the only instance of mass demonstration we saw in the lead-up to the fall of the wall. In Poland, leaders, Jaruzelski and Solidarity, got together in a round table and decided to hold elections, which the communists lost handily. Democracy first, revolution second. In Hungary, as Victor should take pride in, a small group of Hungarian Gorbachev wannabes essentially set out to destroy the socialist system. Their assignment was to reform it. They knew that was impossible, so they decided essentially to destroy it. These were the acts of half a dozen conspirators, if you will, taking aim on communism. Only as their efforts began to gather momentum, filling the space created by Mikhail Gorbachev, only then did the people follow. And when they did so courageously and en masse. And, of course, that is what toppled the wall.
Victor, same question.
On many, many things, Michael and I agree in our books, and certainly in Hungary, it was a revolution from the top down. But I don't think that was so. In Poland, it had been a 10-year struggle with a lot of with a mass workers' action through a trade union organization, Solidarity. That challenge of workers' challenge to the so-called workers' state started it, and that was a revolution, I think, very much from below. At the very end, in 1989, I accept it was an agreement reached, at a series of discussions at so-called round tables, donut-shaped, in fact. But I think that was the culmination of nearly 10 years off and on of mass popular unrest.
My guest on WNYC on this 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall, three authors with new books about the era, Victor Sebastian, who was just talking, Hungarian-born author of many books, including now Revolution 1989, The Fall of the Soviet Empire. Michael Meyer, Newsweek bureau chief for Germany at the time, author of The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story Behind the Fall of the Berlin Wall. And Ramesh Ratnasar, deputy managing editor for Time magazine, author of Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and A Speech That Ended the Cold War. And listeners, anybody who came from that place at that time will get first priority on the phones, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Were you from East Germany, Romania, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, the Soviet Union itself? Anyone? 212-433-9692. How are you feeling today on this 20th anniversary? What is it evocative of for you? And anyone else with thoughts or questions for our guests? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Ramesh, now let's get into all your books now. And Ramesh, you said earlier that the biggest myth is that America won the Cold War, or that Ronald Reagan's speech won the Cold War, and yet your book is called Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and A Speech That Ended the Cold War. So why did you angle the book that way?
Well, as I said, I think it's a myth that the United States won the Cold War. I think that's the key phrase. I do think the United States and Ronald Reagan were instrumental in helping to end the Cold War. And I think the temptation for us has been to view this in sort of triumphalist terms. I believe that the Reagan speech at the Berlin Wall, which some people have viewed as basically just a soundbite that had no real larger significance, I think actually is quite critical, because I think it comes in the middle of this dialogue that was evolving between Reagan and Gorbachev. And I think Reagan, by calling on Gorbachev to tear down the wall, was essentially laying out the terms under which the Cold War would end, that simply signing arms reduction agreements in Reagan's view was not enough, and that if the Soviet Union truly wanted better relations with the West and truly wanted to end the rivalry between East and West, then they had to ease their control in the communist bloc and let Eastern Europe go its own way. And ultimately, though I don't think you can say directly that Gorbachev did this because Reagan told him to, Gorbachev ultimately made that decision. And the critical thing about the events of 1989 is that the Soviet Union and Gorbachev did not intervene to stop democracy from spreading in Eastern and Central Europe. And I think that's a critical point and critical contribution Gorbachev made.
And talking about Reagan, Michael Meyer, I think a lot of people who are too young or vaguely paying attention at the time think that probably Ronald Reagan came into office in 1981 shouting, "Tear down this wall," and after 8 years of relentless pressure, the wall came down in 1989. But it was really in 87, after he was deep into this dialogue with Mikhail Gorbachev, when they had already established this rapport, and Gorbachev had already established perestroika, massive reform of the Soviet system.
Ramesh makes an extremely interesting point, and he is right on. There were in an odd way, two Ronald Reagans. There was a Ronald Reagan who took office shouting, "Down with the evil empire." If you were a Pole at the time or anyone else behind the Iron Curtain, you tended to agree with him, a point that is missed by many Americans on the more liberal side. But the second Ronald Reagan was an engager. He was as welcoming of dialogue with Gorbachev as he was confrontational in his first term. And Ramesh is right. It was that sense of engagement that created the new opportunities. Ronald Reagan ended up in Moscow, as you recall. He was a symbol of change. This, too, gave East Europeans courage, the courage of example, the courage of an image of Reagan and Gorbachev together in Red Square.
I had a friend in the late 80s who was a young Polish jazz disc jockey, and it was dangerous even to be playing progressive jazz on the radio in Poland at that time, but they let him do it, and they let him come to New York for a record-buying trip, which was how we met in music circles. And he was this politically progressive guy. He said, "You know, I agree with everything American progressives stand for, except you don't like Ronald Reagan, and you should like Ronald Reagan." And Victor Sebastian, you write in your book that Reagan was a great president, but for different reasons than we usually think regarding the Soviet Union. What do you think are the myth and the reality?
Well, I'm afraid you're getting agreement around this, around the three of us.
It's not meant to be
looking,
a debate, but
back,
different nuances.
Looking from this distance, he's a greatly beloved figure, Ronald Reagan, but I believe completely misunderstood. I started this process when I started writing this book, even though I'd been a reporter at the time. I wasn't a great admirer of Ronald Reagan, but as I did more and more research, I started admiring him more and more and more. How he fought hard against his own hawks in his own administration. From this distance, sometimes, and in hindsight, I find it hard to see why any neoconservatives can find any reason to admire Ronald Reagan, to be honest. The things he really did, he did not do as a hawk, and he did not do as a cold warrior, but he did as a great, I won't use the word appeaser, but as a conciliator and a seeker after peace rather than confrontation.
You agree, Ramesh?
Well, I do agree. I mean, I think it's important to remember, though, that for the first 4.5 years of the Reagan presidency, diplomacy was really in a deep freeze. I mean, it was happening in sort of back-channel ways, but there was no partner in Moscow. And during those years, Reagan did massively increase the American military budget. He put a lot of pressure on the Soviets in the Third World. He deployed missiles to Western Europe, which many people believe was key in bringing the Soviets back to the bargaining table, and Reagan himself believed was key. So he did believe in negotiating. I do believe he thought you had to negotiate from strength, and that if the other side wasn't willing to talk, that you couldn't simply sit on your hands. And I think that's an important part of his legacy, too. But I agree that first and foremost, his contribution to ending the Cold War was his willingness to engage with Gorbachev. I think if that hadn't happened, it may have gone on a lot longer.
We'll start taking your phone calls in a minute on this 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall with our three guests. New Year's Eve, 1989, just a few weeks after the wall came down, the music played.
That is dust from David Hasselhoff, Looking for Freedom. David, why did you want to come exactly here to the Brandenburg Gate?
1 year ago, we did Looking for Freedom, and it was a dream.
And now,
thank you very much.
David, Looking for Freedom.
Thank you. I'm ready. Okay. One morning in June, some 20 years ago, I was born a rich man's son. I had everything that money could buy, but freedom I had none. I've been looking for freedom. I've been looking so long.
Do you remember? blood separated east from west and the north from south. Said a Humpty Dumpty sat upon the wall, and a Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king horses and all the king.
The song Berlin Wall, Berlin Wall together again, by the reggae artist Coco T. Some of you may recognize him as also being the man behind the Barack Obama reggae song that we played last November on Election Day, which was a big hit with our listeners. Probably safe to declare that we here at the Brian Lehrer Show consider Coco T the greatest current events reggae artist of the late 20th and early 21st century, at least on these two particular days. We are acknowledging the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall with Victor Sebastian, Hungarian-born author of many books, including now Revolution 1989, The Fall of the Soviet Empire. Michael Meyer, Newsweek bureau chief for Germany at the time, author of The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story Behind the Fall of the Berlin Wall, and Ramesh Ratnasar, deputy managing editor at Time magazine, author of Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and A Speech That Ended the Cold War. Michael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling. Hello, Michael.
You're welcome.
Go ahead.
I would like to make four brief points. First of all, there was somebody that predicted the disintegration or the fall of the Soviet Union, and his name was Andrei Amalric, who was a Soviet refusnik, and he wrote a book in the early 70s called Will the Soviet Union Survive Until 1984, which first circulated in Samizdat format and then was published in the West. And I read that when I was at Columbia at the time in the early 70s. The next point is that Shevardnadze's role is usually not acknowledged sufficiently. He was the foreign minister to Gorbachev, and they worked hand in hand in the rehabilitations, or I mean the changes. And the next point is that in the summer of 1989, the Iron Curtain was actually cut in Hungary. The Hungarian-Austrian border was opened up for East German tourists who were congregating in Hungary, trying to obtain visas to the West.
Michael, thank you for all those. We'll take on a couple of them. And Michael Meyer, your book really tells the story of that opening to the West through Hungary as the precursor to so much earlier in 1989. Want to acknowledge that?
Well, those are very good points, and the caller is right. Some people did predict it, including a graduate school professor of mine named Yuri Renan back in 1975. But Hungary, very interesting. In my book, I try to set out why did the Hungarians act as they did? Why did they suddenly, mysteriously start cutting holes in the Iron Curtain, first on May 2nd, second on June 27th, and finally holding a weird, bizarre, pan-European picnic on the border and tossing 700 people over the border into Austria? Why did they do this? There was a plan as sophisticated as Winston Churchill's Operation Fortitude that tricked Hitler into thinking the D-Day invasion would come at Calais and not Normandy, making all the difference in the Western Front. I won't go into it here, but these events didn't happen by accident. A small group of people put a plot in motion of monumental global geopolitical consequence.
I was in Greece in August 1989 on my honeymoon, and it was unbelievable to arrive in Europe and realize the extent to which people were talking about this opening in the wall through Hungary,
mm-hmm.
beyond what we were talking about, beyond the extent to which it was making news in the United States.
It was the decisive entr'acte, if you will, the finale being the Berlin Wall and the opening being Mikhail Gorbachev's arrival on the scene.
And as to who predicted it, Victor Sebastian, you dish a little bit to the CIA in your book and other Western intelligence who did not see it coming at all, despite trillions spent on the espionage industry.
I was coming on to exactly the same point. Even in the spring of 1989, after the Hungarians had cut the first cut the Iron Curtain, the CIA was reporting that this wasn't real, that Gorbachev wasn't for real, that in no way would the Soviet Union and give up its empire, and absolutely no way would they allow a breach in the Berlin Wall. Over a long period, the CIA had considerably overemphasized the power and the of the Soviet system.
And the British got it wrong, and the West Germans got it wrong.
Over here, the Brits have a very quaint view of official secrets, and it's much harder to get hold of documents proving things one way or another. But I do happen to know that pretty much our spooks were saying pretty much the same sort of thing as the CIA, but intelligence agencies don't, on the whole, report how weak your enemy is, because it tends to put you out of a job.
So. Andre in Springfield, you're on WNYC. Hello, Andre.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
You have to excuse me if I'm not being too coherent. It's my first time calling the radio station, the reason I'm calling is I was 5 years old when this happened, and I was in Romania. I was born and raised there, and, it was very chaotic. Everybody was ecstatic and everything, but it seemed like it was very unorganized, and people were just shooting each other left and right. But my question for your guests is, I've been hearing this conspiracy theory that was circulating about how the security of the communist parties, all the securities in the communist countries around there were plotting basically to take control of the economic situations of these countries, because they were gaining a lot of power through what they were doing, but they didn't have any control over the economics, basically, and that's what they wanted to do. So they basically had this whole conspiracy to overthrow the government and take control of these things.
Michael Meyer, anything to that as far as you know?
Yes, not so much elsewhere in Eastern Europe, but certainly in Romania. In Romania, the bloodiest of the East European revolutions, a bona fide popular revolution began in the western city of Timișoara in mid-December. But by the time it spread to Budapest, it became a crypto coup worked by the state security police, the Securitate, and the leaders of that coup stayed in power for quite a number of years after the revolution.
Bud in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Bud.
Hello, hi. I'd be interested in knowing what your guests think, whether or not Pope John Paul and Lech Walesa had any role in the end of the Cold War and tearing down the wall.
Ramesh Ratnasar, we've talked about Reagan, but not yet about the Pope.
Right. Well, the Pope, I think we've learned since the fall of communism, had a huge role in encouraging the dissidents, especially in Poland, and making the Catholic Church a voice for those who were fighting back against the communist regimes throughout Eastern and Central Europe. So the Pope, I think, had had a vital role in, especially in the events in Poland.
Pete in Bridgewater was there in 1990. Pete?
Yeah, it was interesting hearing the music in the last break, because there was another very symbolic musical concert that happened in July of 1990, the Wall Concert with Roger Waters. And four of us went over. And what I remember very vividly was that there were still large sections of the wall intact. And there were these numbers of implements of destruction just scattered at the base of the wall that people could just come up to and pick up and start slamming away and taking down pieces of the wall. And over the course of the 3 or 4 days where we were in Berlin, we then spent a week traveling through East Germany, and we were the first Americans that many people had ever met. But during the course of those couple days that we were in for that concert, there were large chunks taken out of that wall that we saw, and it was surprisingly hard to hit that wall. That was very strong concrete, And despite the fact that there were tons of people banging away on it, it was really really difficult to come down. But the feeling and the energy and the people there just had a renewed energy, especially at the time of that concert. Very
symbolic. You still have a little rock on your mantelpiece?
Sure do. Sure do.
Great story, Pete. Thank you for calling. And we just have a few minutes left with Ramesh Ratnazar, author of Tear Down This Wall, Michael Meyer, author of The Year That Changed the World, Victor Sebastian, author of Revolution 1989. Let's see. Does Margaret Thatcher come up in any of your books? Michael, you're nodding. Does she come off nearly as well as Reagan?
By no means. She came across as a retrograde almost, by contrast to Reagan, who was a heretic to his party. Margaret Thatcher resisted German unification tooth and nail. And if it hadn't been for George Bush Sr. working with his partner, Mikhail Gorbachev, to manage the aftermath of the fall of the wall, we might have seen a much, much messier process at the heart of Europe, because both Mitterrand, François Mitterrand, the French president, and Margaret Thatcher feared a united Germany above all else. And there was the old joke, we like Germany so much we would like to see two of them forever.
Which country is doing the best today, Victor, of the former Soviet states, and which is doing the worst, and why?
Well, probably the best is the eastern part of Germany, but that's a special case. That's a different case. And Poland isn't doing too badly, and Hungary is doing exceptionally badly. Its economy is effectively being controlled by the IMF now. Places like Latvia, the Baltic states, are doing incredibly badly. Romania was doing pretty well, but is now doing badly. The crisis of the banks has had profound effects throughout Europe, and the weaker economies of Europe. In Hungary, for example, which I think is probably doing perhaps, and Latvia, which is probably doing the worst, what happened was a lot of people were advised to buy their mortgages in not their local currencies, but in euros or in Swiss francs or even in Japanese yen, and millions of people were buying their houses with borrowing this. And when their currency plunged, the Hungarian forint plunged or whatever, they then had to finance these unbelievably expensive mortgages in currencies, and they couldn't. And suddenly their payments quadrupled, or in some cases, particularly a friend of mine, suddenly found their mortgage monthly payments were six times higher. This has had a profound impact in some of those countries, and they have huge loans to pay. Their budget deficits are enormous, even by American standards.
Let me get one more caller in here. Gazer in Farmingville, who came from Hungary in 1965. Gazer, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. What I would like to say that for an immigrant who came from behind the Iron Curtain, how impossible the whole thing looked like at that time, at 89. I just married a Romanian girl who escaped a few months before, and she thought she'd never be able to go back. And I thought I'd never be able to go back. And a year later, we were back in visiting her parents and see that the whole Iron Curtain fell without one gunshot.
It is remarkable that there was almost no violence in the bringing down of this totalitarian empire that invaded Hungary along the way, that invaded Czechoslovakia along the way when they spoke up. Amazing that it happened so peacefully, Michael Meyer, in 1989.
It is amazing. And on this day, I think we should remember what the end of the Cold War, the fall of the Berlin Wall, commemorates. For 40 years, we lived under the threat of nuclear Armageddon. Hundreds of thousands, millions of people lost their lives in Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Korea, Angola, Latin America, all of these proxy wars that sprung from the the wound that was the Cold War, and of course, as Victor mentions, Afghanistan. I also just a final note: when one caller mentioned Richard Roger Waters' famous concert, the Wall concert in the summer of '90. At that time, I was in Yugoslavia on my first trip. And a bunch of Croatian nationalists had seized a central railroad crossing in the middle of the country, closing off the coast, closing off access to Serbia. It was the beginning of the Balkan Wars. And it's interesting to remember, just as the terror followed upon La Gloire of the French Revolution, so too did the killing fields of Yugoslavia follow upon the joyous celebrations of the fall of the Berlin Wall. It's a point to remember, the good, the bright, and the black.
Michael Meyer, Newsweek bureau chief for Germany at the time, author of The Year That Changed the World, The Untold Story Behind the Fall of the Berlin Wall. Victor Sebastian, Hungarian-born author of many books, including Revolution, 1989, The Fall of the Soviet Empire. Ramesh Ratnasar, deputy managing editor for Time, author now of Tear Down This Wall, A City, A President, and a Speech That Ended the Cold War. A lot to remember. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up in a minute, a close look at the abortion restrictions in the health reform bill passed by the House on Saturday. This was a last-minute insertion into the bill, which was necessary to get enough votes. We'll look at those abortion restrictions in the House health reform bill.